Informed Choice Radio, episode 394, Doing Things by the Book.
Recorded live from Cranley in Surrey, this is Informed Choice Radio. Want to make the most of your money and your life? You've come to the right place. Here at Informed Choice, we believe that when it comes to your money, the more you know, the faster it can grow. Now, here's your host, Chartered Financial Planner, Martin Bamford.
In money, as in life, there are two ways of doing most things. You can do things the easy, informal way, or you can do things right. You can do them by the book. Later in this episode, I'm talking about the importance of managing money for others by the book and what can go wrong when you enter into informal financial arrangements with your relatives. You can find out more about the podcast, you can listen to our entire back catalogue of episodes, and you can find the show notes for this episode at icradio.co.uk. Now, before we get into the main topic for this episode, here's a roundup of the latest personal finance news. House price growth in the UK has slowed to its lowest rate in nearly 6 years. The latest nationwide house price index found growth slowing to almost a complete halt in January. Prices were just 0.1% higher compared to a year earlier. This was down from 0.5% growth in December. It means the average price of a property is now £211,966. According to Nationwide, this slowdown is due to the impact of the uncertain economic outlook on buyer sentiment. Buyer uncertainty is outweighing otherwise positive factors, including solid employment growth, stronger wage growth, and continued low borrowing costs. This annual measure of house price growth hasn't been weaker since February 2013, when it registered zero growth. Robert Gardner, Nationwide's chief economist, said the economic outlook remains unusually uncertain. However, if the economy continues to grow at a modest pace, with the unemployment rate and borrowing costs remaining close to current levels, we would expect UK house prices to rise at a low single-digit pace in 2019. The Italian economy entered an economic recession at the end of last year, according to new official figures. Italy's economy contracted by 0.2% in the final quarter of 2018, after shrinking in size by 0.1% in the third quarter. This is according to the Istat Statistics Office. According to Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte, the recession is likely to continue into 2019. The recession is happening against a backdrop of slowing economic growth in the 19-nation eurozone, where growth was 0.2% in the final quarter of 2018, in line with expectations. For the 28-nation EU as a whole, economic growth in the final quarter was 0.3%. Financial advisors and their clients will have to pay an additional £78 million towards compensation costs for failed firms. The extra levy for the Financial Services Compensation Scheme follows a rising cost of claims. It means advice firms will pay a total of £197 million towards the FSCS in 2018-19. Releasing its budget for the next financial year, the FSCS said it expects to raise £240 million from the life, pensions and investment intermediary classes, which are largely made up of financial advice firms. FSCS Chief Executive Mark Neal said, "This is the last FSCS plan and budget that I shall introduce as Chief Executive. It is also the first plan and budget carrying forward FSCS's strategy for the 2020s, protecting the future, with its four pillars of prepare, protect, promote and prevent. And the first year in which the recent funding review changes with the new funding classes and provider contribution will take effect, along with an increased limit for some classes." The UK car industry experienced investment halving last year as a result of Brexit uncertainty and economic anxiety. According to the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, investment in the automotive sector fell to £589 million last year, down nearly 50% compared to its 2018 level. It's the lowest level of investment in the sector since the 2008 global financial crisis. SMMT Chief Executive Mike Hawes called on the government to avoid the permanent devastation of the sector as a result of a no-deal exit from by Britain of the European Union, saying investment has effectively stalled. A lot of that is on hold because until you see what the future is, do you have the confidence to invest in that plant when there is that sort of uncertainty? A new survey of financial advisors has found that more than a third expect to increase their clients' cash holdings in the first half of this year. The survey from National Savings and Investments found security is still the top priority for advisors' clients. 38% of advisors surveyed expect to increase clients' cash holdings, with 27% recommending their clients hold at least 20% of their assets in cash. The proportion of advisors expecting to make no change to cash holding recommendations for clients fell from 77% to 58% in this latest survey. NS&I Head of Intermediary Relationships Andrew Pike said, "Our most recent advisor survey indicates that security remains the top priority for advisors' clients. There also appears to be a clear trend towards cash, reflected in both an increase in the proportion of advisors expecting to increase their clients' cash holdings heading into 2019, and an increase in the proportion of advisors that recommend that cash takes a bigger share of investment portfolios." Now, as I said in the introduction, when it comes to your money, I think there's a couple of ways to approach things. You can do things the easy, simple, informal way, or you can do things the slightly harder, slightly less simple, formal way. You can do things by the book. It's a choice we make when it comes to making important financial decisions, especially when we need to make financial decisions on behalf of other people, usually relatives. Do we do things informally, or do we do things by the book? Now, we often talk to our clients about the importance of having a valid will in place. This is a crucial legal document. It clearly sets out your wishes for what should happen to the value of your property and other assets like investments when you die. Now, without a valid will in place, you die intestate. And when that happens, your property gets distributed according to the law. That may or may not match your own wishes. Just as important, though, as having a will in place is drawing up what's called a lasting power of attorney. These legal documents give someone you trust responsibility for making decisions about your money and also about your health and welfare, but only in the event that you're unable to make those important decisions for yourself in the future. Now, despite the importance of having a lasting power of attorney in place, relatively few people draw up those documents. Instead, they often rely on the goodwill of relatives to manage their finances should the worst happen. And the reason I'm talking about this is it's based on some new research from Co-op, and they found that a quarter of over 45-year-olds have got access to a relative's bank account, and that excludes the bank account of their spouse. That seems a lot to me, over a quarter of over 45-year-olds having access to a relative's bank account. Of those adults, 7% have set up formal joint accounts with the relative, and 1 in 5 have access to a relative's bank card or online accounts. So they've got informal financial arrangements in place. Looking at those with joint bank accounts in place with a relative, excluding a spouse, more than a third said they had access to a bank account owned by their parents. 18% said they were able to access a sibling's bank account, and 11% can access the bank account for an aunt or uncle. Nearly 1 in 10 who admitted to this joint bank account arrangement with a relative said they could access the account belonging to a grandparent. Now, the research was carried out with over 2,000 people aged over 45. They told researchers the main reasons for having joint accounts in place were the ability to manage money on their behalf, to do things like pay for groceries and also luxuries, including holidays. These informal arrangements to manage money for a relative are a really, really bad idea. So unlike using a lasting power of attorney, there are no safeguards in place to prevent a relative from borrowing money or spending your money to buy things for their own benefit. And suspicion of that sort of activity taking place was evident within the research. 11% said they were worried about a relative borrowing money if they were in need. And a further 5% said they had suspicions that their relative may have previously taken money. Well, duh, of course they are. They've got access to your bank account without any safeguards in place. Gavin Holt, who's head of probate at the Co-op, said it's concerning that so many people are ignoring or perhaps not aware of the benefits of lasting powers of attorney and are putting these accounts of convenience in place instead. Whilst it may seem convenient and safe at the time, in our experience, these informal arrangements can often cause significant problems which only come to light after death. The worst of the problems, and sadly one of the most regular, is where financial abuse is alleged to have taken place. This can add months, if not years, to the length of the probate process. So rather than putting in place informal financial arrangements with relatives where it's needed, I think it's far more sensible to use a lasting power of attorney. Once in place, these can only be used to make financial decisions once they've been registered with the Office of the Public Guardian, the OPG. And that registration with the OPG can happen in respect of health and welfare only where you've lost mental capacity. For the property and financial affairs version, there's two types. There's one that covers property and financial affairs, one that covers health and welfare, and we recommend that clients have both types in place. But for the property and financial affairs version of the lasting power of attorney, they can only be registered before or they can be registered before or after the donor loses mental capacity, unless you specify otherwise by putting the arrangement in place. And once registered, the lasting power of attorney can only be used in line with the terms of the Mental Capacity Act 2005. And the rules under that act include a requirement to act in the donor's best interest at all times. That's something that's not formally required when you give someone access to a joint bank account or access to your own bank account. So when you have an informal banking arrangement with a relative. There's an additional duty under a lasting power of attorney. It's described as no profit, and it means that as an attorney, you can't get any unauthorized profit or personal benefit from your position as that trusted person. And as an attorney, you've also got a duty to keep accounts, and that means keeping a record of all of the transactions you carry out on behalf of the donor. That might be as simple as keeping a record of bank statements, but if you're looking after the financial affairs of someone with more complex financial arrangements, then you might need more detailed statements of account just to satisfy that rule, that additional duty. Finally, there's a duty to keep monies and accounts separate, and that means keeping your bank accounts separate from those of the donor. The exception there typically is where you're acting as the attorney for a spouse or civil partner and you had a joint bank account before, and then when they lose mental capacity, you can continue to run as a joint bank account, but whilst you're a lasting power of attorney too, that's okay. If you already have an informal financial arrangement in place with a relative, it's not too late to formalise it by putting in place a lasting power of attorney. Or if your relative's already lost mental capacity, so it's too late to create a new lasting power of attorney, you can apply to the Court of Protection for guardianship. But I really must stress, I think it's a really, really bad idea to rely on informal financial arrangements. All sorts of things can and do go wrong when you give people access to your money without the proper paperwork, the proper legal protections in place. So if you find yourself in that position, look at it again, consider putting in place a lasting power of attorney. They're not expensive, they're not complicated to put in place. You can work with a solicitor to get them drawn up, or you can look on the websites, the government website, and find the paperwork yourself. The registration fee is very affordable, but it's better than the sort of mishaps that come to light typically when people have died and they've given a relative access to their bank account, they've given them their bank card and PIN number, they've even set up a joint bank account with that relative so they can help manage their money. Not a good idea. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can leave me a voicemail via our website. That's icradio.co.uk/voicemail. You can email me at martin@icfp.co.uk or get in touch on Twitter. That's @martinbamford. And I'd love to hear from you. A big thank you to Graham Jones for leaving us this voicemail following our podcast episode on Monday. That episode featured an interview with Jeanette Makins from Close Brothers talking all about financial well-being at work.
Hi, Martin. This is Graham Jones here. Just listen to your financial well-being podcast. Your podcasts are always informative, but this was an absolute gem. So I'd encourage anybody to listen to it, and certainly employers, not just to listen, to actually take note and see what learnings they can take to help their employee force take control of their finances, improving their financial well-being as well as their mental health, which, you know, is clearly going to help their work performance as well. So brilliant. Keep it up. Cheers. Bye.
Thank you, Graham. I do love getting voicemails from our listeners. If you head along to icradio.co.uk/voicemail, leave me a message and I'll play it in a future episode. That's all for this episode. That's all for this week. I hope it's been useful. Do stay tuned for the after show. It's coming up right after the following music. And it's where I talk about what we've been up to here at Informed Choice this week. So until next time, I'm Martin Bamford and this is Informed Choice Radio. And remember, when it comes to your money, the more you know, the faster it can grow. Hello, welcome back. Welcome to the After Show for Informed Choice Radio episode 394. As always, this is a part of the episode where I talk about some of the other stuff, so the stuff that's been going on in my life and at Informed Choice over the past week. So it's a bit less formal than the main body. Feel free to tune out if this doesn't interest you and just sticks to the main content, but I hope you'll stick around. So looking back over my calendar for the past 7 days, we had a reasonably quiet weekend. The main reason for that was Ryan, our youngest, who's seven, was recovering from some dental surgery he had towards the end of last week. He had some teeth removed, lots of fill-ins and sort of caps and things, and quite a few metal spaces installed. His teeth were in a fairly bad shape, unfortunately. Not due to any poor sort of brushing habits or anything, I think probably due to diet when he was a baby and that sort of thing, and his dislike of any dairy products and calcium. But it's all fixed now, and he was fully healed within a few days. So this week already, he's been swimming, playing football, he's been to Beavers this week, so his recovery abilities are quite impressive. I often call him Wolverine. But as a result, we had a fairly quiet weekend. He didn't get to play football Saturday morning, unfortunately. Although on Friday night, Megan, my oldest 12-year-old, convinced me to take her along to a theatre performance at the local arts centre. And it was called Shivers, and it was very good. It was a one-man play, accompanied by a violinist, and it was a series of ghost stories. And we met the author afterwards and the performer afterwards, had a chat with him. Megan is absolutely obsessed with horror and ghost stories and that sort of thing, which is why she took me along to Shocktoberfest last year for her birthday. Very scary stuff. I think I jumped a total of 3 times during these stories. So some spooky stories. And as I'm sat alone at night in a building on my own, I'm not going to recover those memories and scare myself right now. But then looking at this week, a busy week in the office this week. I recorded 2 new podcast interviews, which will be coming up in future episodes. Earlier this week, I spoke to Richard Asejo, who's author of a book called Masters of Craft. That's all about how old jobs, traditionally old jobs, are becoming trendy again in the new urban economy. And I really enjoyed chatting to Richard about that. He's an associate professor of sociology. When I left university, or when I left college, I wanted to go to university and study sociology, but I didn't get to because I slacked off in my second year of college and got really bad A-level results and couldn't go straight to university as I wanted to. So I had to go to a local polytechnic first and then finish off my degree later, by which time I'd lost interest in sociology and got into the world of business. But speaking to a sociologist was really interesting, and this sort of trend that's happening with these old blue collar jobs, typically low status, traditionally low status jobs, now becoming very hot and trendy. Really enjoyed hearing about that. So that episode's coming out next Monday. In fact, here's a short clip of my conversation with Richard, just to give you a flavor of that episode.
The most obvious one would be chefs. I think that's the most popular example of this trend that I studied, of an old job, a very traditional job, a relatively low status job. Chefs were not, they were blue collar workers. It's not something you ever really wanted your son to do as their career. It was something that you just kind of fell into, unless you were at like an elite French restaurant or something like that. Otherwise, it was a pretty low status job until the last 20 years, 25, 30 years or so, that chefs have become celebrities and that they've become crucial taste influencers. And there are TV shows and films and whole channels that are dedicated to this.
So that episode coming out on Monday. Also this week, I interviewed Melissa Leong. Melissa's written a fantastic new book called Happy Go Money. And it's all about the relationship between happiness and how we spend our money. So that one coming out Monday week. And here's a short clip from Melissa as well.
We do get a burst of dopamine when we buy something new in the brain. And so it lights up that love and sex and drugs sort of area of your brain, which feels really delicious and yummy and fabulous. But they're chemicals, they dissipate. And then you want to chase that feeling again. We also chase many different kinds of things when we buy stuff. So one of the things I ask my readers to do, and listeners and viewers of TV shows that I appear on, I say, okay, think of the last 3 unplanned purchases that you made. How did you feel before you bought them? And how did you feel afterwards?
So a couple of great podcast interviews in the can this week. I've got a few more lined up for next week as well, including one I'm really looking forward to, which is an interview with a lady called Anja Shortland, who's written a book called Kidnap. So all about the economics of kidnap and ransom, which I figure is a personal finance related subject, isn't it? It's a bit off the wall, a bit off the beaten path of the subjects we normally discuss, but the book's fantastic. And I'm looking forward to that interview in particular. Also this week, I had a Chamber of Commerce committee meeting earlier this week. We're making plans for a spring shopping event in the village, and possibly also a world record attempt. And I'm trying at the moment to register the world record we'd like to try and break as a village, as a community. So it's not going to be an individual record. But I'm trying to register it with Guinness World Records. And that is proving much harder than it probably should be, mainly because the registration system on their website is completely broken. So I've had a few back and forth conversations with Guinness World Records about this. Hopefully they'll get it fixed. I'll keep trying. And once we've managed to register this as an official attempt, I'll share some more details, let you know what we're up to. It may be something you want to come along and get involved in, because it's going to involve a lot of people. And it's always fun to try and break a record. Also this week on Tuesday, Nick and I had lunch with a financial planner that we've worked with for many, many years. We've known for a long time. He's based in the West Midlands, and we get together from time to time, usually when he's down this way meeting with a client, and we catch up and we share ideas and experiences, what's going on. Now, I've not seen this chap, Tony, for quite some time. And the first thing he said to me when he walked through the door is that I look like giant haystacks. And for the younger listeners to this podcast, in fact, it's almost outside of my my experience too, but Giant Haystacks was a wrestler from the 70s and 80s. Now, I'm pretty sure he didn't mean that as a compliment. So A, I need to probably lose a bit of weight, and B, probably consider tidying up my beard a little bit. But you know, if this whole career as a financial planner and marketing agency owner doesn't go to plan in the future, maybe I could become a professional wrestler. Who knows? There we go. I'm recording this episode on Thursday evening. So it's been a really busy day today. Most of the morning I was in a design team meeting for a country park, the country park that we're creating in Cranley. It's called Knoll Park. And that was a meeting with our consultants. We're finalising a few aspects of the detail design and also making sure we satisfy the various planning conditions that are in place. And then later today, we had an estate agent come around to value our house. So Becky and I have had our eye on this vacant house just around the corner, actually, for quite some months now, because it's vacant, I've had a little poke around in the garden and stuff, looked through various windows, but now we're sort of thinking a bit more seriously about it. We had an investment in another property and that's about to be sold, and we'll get our investment back, so it feels like probably the right time to look at moving up the housing ladder into a slightly bigger home with an extra bedroom, so we'll have a bedroom for each of the kids, a bit more living space. It's an interesting one, because I've owned the house we live in since 2004, so 15 years now, and it was just interesting to see how its value has changed since I bought it, and also chat to the estate agent about local housing market conditions, what we can expect from the process. We're not expecting anything to happen overnight or too quickly, but we are off to look at a couple of other houses as well as the one we've got our eye on next week, and then we'll make a decision about putting our place on the market. Some other Informed Choice and Informed Choice Radio news I can't tell you too much about at the moment, but it is making good progress. Something Shelley is working on and leading, which I'll be supporting her on, and that is turning Informed Choice Radio into an actual full-blown radio show on a proper radio station. So we're looking at hopefully producing a one-hour-long weekly radio show that will be broadcast live, that will go out to a community we serve, and taking some of the content, so some of the interviews, 200 plus interviews we've recorded in the past for Informed Choice Radio, mixing those in with topical stuff like personal finance news and other up-to-date interviews and discussions and phone-ins and that sort of thing, and creating a one-hour money-based radio show. So really excited about that. We've got another meeting about that coming up at the start of March. And then hopefully we'll make some progress later this year. But of course, the more we do on that side of things, the more content and more episodes it will create for Informed Choice Radio podcast. So it has a sort of circular effect, which is really exciting. So again, as soon as I can share a bit more information about that, I will do. The book I'm currently reading is called Ninth and Nowhere. It's by Jeffrey Deaver. And I'm continuing with my goal to read less nonfiction this year. So consume less nonfiction and read a bit more fiction instead. Although as we reach the end of January, I've not yet started writing my own book. And that was the reason for aiming to consume less nonfiction content, to free up a bit more time so I could create rather than consume. I will definitely get working on that in February, and feel free to slap my wrist if you see me. And I've not yet written a few chapters by the time you see me in February. Finally, before I wrap things up, a big thank you to everyone who has downloaded an episode of Informed Choice Radio in January. We've had a brilliant month for downloads. We're up 33% on December, and it was our best month for downloads in January since last September. So really positive figures there. I'm really pleased to see that. So thank you to everyone who's downloaded it. A big welcome to any new listeners if you're new in January. And please drop me a line as well. Say hello on Twitter @Martin Bamford or Instagram @Martin Bamford. I would love to hear from you. So until next time, thank you for listening to Informed Choice Radio. Do consider sharing this episode with a friend. And if you've not done so already, press that subscribe button so you don't miss any future episodes. We will be back on Monday with episode 395. That features an interview with Richard Asejo, author of Masters of Craft. Do tune in then. Thank you.